Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
I love the Raiders. Most of all, I love to win.
You're now listening to State of the Nation with Jimmy Durkin, Vic Tafer, Ted Nguyen, and Tashawn Reed on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Jets coming. Carr puts some air under it. Wide open is Ruggs for the touchdown. Miraculous. No, he didn't.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to State of the Nation post-game edition here on the Athletic Podcast Network. Jimmy Durkin, Vic Tafer, Ted Nguyen, Tashawn Reed. It's a victory post-game that I don't think any of us saw coming in this fashion. Obviously, we all expected the Raiders would win this game against the Jets, and then it looked like they were not going to win. They, on the failed fourth down with under 2 minutes to go, the Jets gave the ball back to the Raiders with 35 seconds left. And then, with 5 seconds left, the Raiders score and a 46-yard touchdown from Derek Carr to Henry Ruggs III. As the Jets go into an all-out 8-man blitz, cover zero, and Henry Ruggs burns an undrafted cornerback for a touchdown. Guys, this is going to be a game that is obviously going to be remembered for the way the Jets lost it, probably more than the way the Raiders won it. But it's an important win for the Raiders, but just a stunning game overall.
Yeah, it was pretty shocking. I mean, I thought it was over when they had the 11-point lead, and I think they had three possessions in a row where I thought they could have iced the game. They didn't do it, and then all of a sudden, the Jets remembered, hey, we can run the ball whenever we want to against this defense. They started running the ball again, and so they took the lead. And but yeah, it was just an amazing turnaround for both, you know, like you said, good and bad, and a win they had to have. I'm not sure, you know, it's not pretty, but they got it, and now they're staring on to kind of like an elimination series the next few weeks against some good teams.
Yeah, I mean, offensively, they were just out of rhythm. Like, they couldn't run the ball. Jets have a better run defense, people think, and obviously Josh Jacobs not being in the game hurts. And the passing game, they just couldn't catch any rhythm. And Nelson Agholor, I mean, he could have had a 200-yard game with Darren Waller. He was open so many times. I mean, there was a time in the first half where he was wide open, Carr didn't see him. And then in the second half, towards the end of the game, he got open a bunch, and they just couldn't connect. And those two had a pretty good, have been connecting throughout the season, but they just couldn't do in this game. But Carr got a big connection with Ruggs at the end of the game, obviously, for a touchdown. They feel good about it now, and they should feel good about a win. But, you know, there's some issues going on with this team they have to fix if they really want to go on a playoff run.
Yeah, I could tell early on that the defense, you know, they haven't had many good games this season, but this obviously wasn't going to be one of them. I mean, they were making the Jets look pretty good on offense. Sam Darnold, who's been awful for the majority of the season, was cooking. Like I said, they were running the ball at will. They were pretty much doing what they wanted, and then they had that meltdown at the end of the first half where they had three turnovers in a row that, you know, like Vic said, it looked like the Raiders probably had the game in hand at that point, and then, you know, the offense kind of had their cold spell. But yeah, this defense, obviously they had – you know, they were missing Damon Arnett for most of the game because it looked like he got concussed for the second straight week without Malik Collins and Jonathan Abrams. So they were down three starters. But, I mean, the Jets had the worst offense in the league coming into this game. And, you know, I already knew it, but it was just, this game just showed, like, you know, this defense is the ultimate liability for this team. I mean, the offense, you know, they had their lapses. They could have done better in certain areas. But they scored 31 points. And even less than 31 should be enough against the Jets, honestly. So, you know, that was probably the biggest concern coming out this game. I'm not too worried about the offense. You know, I think with Josh Jacobs being out and the Jets being good against the run, we didn't expect much from the running game. And the offensive line, you know, this is the second week in a row where they look kind of lackluster. You know, they didn't give up as many sacks today, but they couldn't get anything going on the ground. But, yeah, the offensive side, I think they're fine. But the defense is just – the offense really can't afford to have any miscues. You know, they almost have to score every time. For them to win down the stretch here.
Yeah, I thought the defense was making some little bit, not big, but small strides in the last month or so. But and that's why I was surprised by today because, I mean, I didn't expect Sam Darnold and those running backs, guys I never heard of, to kind of move the ball like that. I just think, like Jimmy and I were talking about it before the podcast, and the Frank Gore injury kind of actually, you know, helped the Jets because they had some guys come in with some juice, and it definitely hurt the Raiders in terms of their running game. So definitely I'm very alarmed by that today. I'm kind of almost thinking that Malik Collins may have been better than I thought he was because I think his absence was noticeable today in terms of the holes in the middle of the defense.
Yeah, no Malik Collins, no Jonathan Abram. Those are guys that, you know, Collins takes his heat for kind of being invisible this year and Abrams for the plays that he misses. But obviously he does make plays. And so they still should be able to handle the worst offense in the league without those guys. We've all said all along, this Raiders defense, we don't expect them to be good. They don't have to be great. They just have to be, you know, close to average. And they're far from that. But hey, they're 7-5. I don't know how Raider fans feel after this game. I mean, because I think they probably at the end of there, they got themselves conditioned for the fact that they were going to be, you know, crying away a loss to the Jets on the road. And in a lot of ways, it probably still kind of felt like one just because of how poorly they played. I mean, is it realistic to still talk about this team as a potential playoff team after barely beating the Jets?
I think so. I mean, they're only one game out of the playoff race. You know, obviously with the big matchup with the Colts coming up here, yeah, a bunch of those guys that were out, you know, Josh Jacobs, Jonathan Abram, you know, potentially Trent Brown, you know, they might get some of their big starters that they were without back for that game. And I do think those guys make a difference. I don't think they look like they look today if they were closer to being fully healthy. I don't think that Colts game is like an unwinnable game, you know, and if they knock off the Colts, then they're right in it. I think they'll be right back in that seventh place spot. If the Dolphins continue to win. So, yeah, I think it's too close to, like, jump ship or anything at this point. But it's definitely, you know, concerning about, you know, you look at the schedule. If you're barely beating the Jets, then you really can't write off any of those teams. And then they pretty much have to win out or maybe only have one more loss the rest of the way for them to make it in.
I think offensively they just have some things they have to clean up. I mean, like I said, there were some opportunities for Aguilar downfield that they couldn't connect with, and they probably could have blew the game wide open earlier if they were able to capitalize on those things. Josh Jacobs makes a big difference. If Trent Brown's able to come back, he's going to make a difference. I mean, this is the same team that the only team to beat the Chiefs in a very, very long time, but they also could have been a team that lost to the Jets in a very long time. So they're just kind of an enigma, but they're a wild card type of team that, you know, could show is just so different week to week from what we see. They do have playoff potential. You can't rely on them week to week. So we'll see what happens.
I was gonna say, for all the talk of the easy schedule this time of the year, I think the Raiders have shown they can beat anybody and they can lose anybody. I think that's just the way it is with this roster. I think there's enough holes and, you know, inconsistency on this team where you can't really say for certain that they should beat this team or lose to that team. So I think they survived today somehow in the last play of the game. Kudos to Henry Ruggs for getting open and Carr for hitting him. And kudos to Craig Williams for a really, truly terrible defensive call. But, yeah, they're still alive. So I think that's obviously they have some confidence now. Even if it's against the Jets, a win's a win. So they have three home games coming up, and the offense has to carry them, but you hope that the defense can make some more plays. And again, today, they got a great game out of Cleveland Furl and even Trayvon Mullen had an interception. So they got some guys today who made plays, but clearly most of the guys in defense did not.
Let's break down the final 2 minutes of this game, really. I mean, you look at the Raiders, you know, before they end up getting this miracle win, I mean, they were right in position to go ahead and try to take the lead with under 2 minutes to go. They got the ball down to the 9-yard line. They had scored a touchdown on the pass to Hunter Renfrow that was nullified by offsetting penalties, which, you know, helpful for the Raiders that there was a penalty on the other side. So it wasn't just the Gabe Jackson holding call on Quinnen Williams. And then so 4th and 3 from the 9, and they run that play where Carr tries to hit Aguilar, and really just kind of short hopped him, just not a great throw. And it looked like that was going to be the defining image of this game until the Raiders were able to get the ball back.
He missed a long throw to Aguilar, and then on 4th down, Aguilar got open on a corner route, and he kind of just threw off his back foot and missed him too. Actually, before that, there was another opportunity to Aguilar that he threw short because he threw off his back foot as well. And then on that final play, I guess this is something that Greg Williams has done regularly in Hail Mary situations where he just like all out blitz quarterbacks. So this is not something weird. And they had a quarterback spy on Derek Carr, who doesn't really scramble that often on that play. just overall bad call, but it's something that's not irregular for Greg Williams. It's in his DNA.
Yeah, I'm not buying it. I think the Jets, like, I'm not going to say they were trying to lose, but they weren't trying to win when you're doing something like that. I mean, but the Raiders didn't have any timeouts left. You all out blitz them, and you put, you know, a cornerback who ran a 4.58 at the combine on one of the fastest players in the league with no safety help and man coverage with 13 seconds. Like, it just screams, like, please beat me, you know? And this is like, the Raiders still have to connect. Like, you know, Carr has to make that throw, Ruggs has to haul it in. But I'm not giving Greg Williams a pass for that one, man. I don't care if it's worked before.
Greg Williams is not going to be, he's not going to be on staff next year. This whole staff's not going to be there next year.
He's going to be the head coach.
he's fighting for his head coaching life. He wants those letters, those head coaching letters to come in.
He's going
to
get a big bonus. They're going to give him a big bonus check when they get the number one pick.
Are we certain that the staff won't be back next year? I mean, maybe this is all part of the plan. Maybe, like, you know what, we're going to get Trevor Lawrence next season. And you guys are, I mean, I'm not sure. I've heard rumors about Gase maybe staying on next year. So, I mean, I know Gase and Williams go back, I mean, they're kind of hot and cold, but I agree. The whole season's been kind of fishy for the Jets. I think that Patriots game was fishy. Today's a little fishy. Plus, they're not very good, obviously. They don't have a lot of talent. But, yeah, today's a game. I think the players in that locker room, both offense and defense in the Jets locker room, were all talking about, I can't believe that call. Like, I mean, that's a game you shouldn't lose that way. So I think that even the players now are kind of like, hey, I mean, what's going on here?
For Ruggs making that touchdown catch, however bad the play call was for the Jets, you know, for him to get that touchdown after kind of the game that he had experienced. He had the fumble earlier in the second half. He had the ball that went off his hands for the interception, and I know Gruden said that he should have caught it. It did hit him in the hands, although it was a fastball from a pretty short distance. And, you know, when I first saw the play, you know, they ran that a lot where they sent him in motion and he kind of went out to the flat. I thought Carr had him kind of right there, right after he finished the motion and was open in the flat and probably should have thrown it then. But then it kind of, you know, the play extended a little bit and then he tried to hit him with the fastball. So Gruden kind of blamed him for that interception. Again, no matter how bad the play call is for the Jets, for the rookie to make that kind of play, make a game-winning play, that could be something that sparks him a little bit.
Oh, definitely. I think, plus, when the ball is in the air for a long time, and based on what happened previously with the, you know, the interception and the fumble, I'm not sure everybody was like, oh, he's definitely going to catch it. I think everyone's kind of holding their breath, like, making sure he gets to the ball and brings it down. So definitely a big confidence thing for him. I think, ideally, I still don't know why I don't give him more shots deep during the game. I think it's just the obvious thing you can do and maybe draw a pass interference call. I still want to see him get more targets, but he made a play at the end of the game. They kind of went to him with a double move, and it worked. So I think it's a nice day for him. And also, I think it was Derek Carr's, 20th comeback win. I think that leads the what was the stat the Raiders said? I think it's the most comeback wins in the first 7 years of your career, most fourth quarter comeback wins. So he's been clutch in the fourth quarter over his career. So again, today he wasn't always sharp, but he made the plays when he needed to.
And I think for Ruggs on that play specifically, like, it wasn't like he just ran a streak, you know, just a regular go ball and just ran past a guy. Like, he had to, you know, actually, you know, run a good route and get him to bite on that inside fake before breaking back outside and, you know, have the ability to hit his top, maybe not his top speed, but to accelerate off of that so quickly to get open. I mean, you know, that's one of the major reasons why the Raiders drafted him. You know, it's not like he's just a speedster. He has all the skill set that you would want from a receiver. It's just a matter of putting it all together. And that hasn't happened very often this season. He's kind of had these big flashes, whether it be that catch or the two long catches he had against the Chiefs. Obviously, there's some more factors to that, like, you know, the Raiders target receivers fewer opportunities than any other team in the league, and the offensive line has been beat up, so he doesn't get as many chances as some of the other rookie wide receivers. But it's moments like this where, you know, the Raiders kind of stand on that pick, you know, even with some of the other rookie receivers in the league having a better season.
I agree. This is a big confidence booster for Ruggs, especially with those missed opportunities early in the game. And they're going to need him to be big against the Colts, because the Colts have a pretty good defense, one of the top defense statistically, but their weaknesses are their corners. Their corners don't play very well in man coverage. They aren't very fast. So next week potentially could be huge for Ruggs, and having that confidence booster at the end of the game will hopefully, you know, carry on to the next game.
Speaking of confidence boosters, about Darren Waller's confidence. I got 200 yards catching, 13 catches. Beat man-to-man coverage every different way possible. Just clearly another game where he shows he's definitely one of the top three tight ends in the NFL.
They just refused to double-team him, too, which is kind of confounding. They just kept on rotating guys to try to cover him man-to-man, and they couldn't do it, and they just would not double him. So another questionable decision from Greg Williams there.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors. 17 targets for Waller today, I mean, to get those 200 yards. I mean, the guy is just... he hasn't had the big yardage this year. I think he came in to the game, you know, what, 8.5 yards per catch or whatever. But this was finally his breakout game, getting the yardage and getting his kind of numbers up to where about where you'd expect him to be.
Yeah, we always get the, you know, the post game notes, of course, from the team. And like, this is like one of the best, you know, receiving games, period, like in Raiders history. I mean, he's the first Raider tight end to hit 200 receiving yards. And his 13 catches are the second most in a single game in Raider history. And you know, he also stacks up there with some of the other all-time great tight end performances, regardless of the team. So, you know, obviously the Jets made it a little bit easy for him at time, leaving him in single-man coverage when he was roasting guys so easily. But, yeah, you know, like Vic said, I think I argue we put him, you know, second in the league as far as tight ends behind Travis Kelce.
I actually looked it up at one point. I was going to say the most catches in a game by a tight end is by his teammate, Jason Witten, at 18 for the Cowboys in one game.
So you're putting him ahead of Kittle?
I think availability factors into it, too, with that. It's like, you know, Kittle has been a little bit banged up. And I think at their very best, like, I think I would rather have Waller. I think Kittle's the better, maybe overall tight end, better blocker, but I think Waller's the better receiver.
I'd probably still go with Kittle over Waller, but I think Waller's definitely third in my mind.
I would go third just because Kittle's so dominating as a run blocker. But I guess it depends on what kind of offense you want to run too.
Yeah, and Kittle's a little bit better after the catch. I mean, that play against New Orleans last year was insane. But we talked about not targeting the receivers much. The Raiders don't. They did target receivers 23 times on Sunday. That still was less than half of Derek Carr's 47 pass attempts. But if you want to look at one area where the Raiders' offense, why they struggled, Ted referenced the kind of lack of connection with Nelson Agholor. 11 targets, and he only had 4 catches for 38 yards. And, you know, right before the touchdown to Ruggs, Agholor got deep on a go route, and Carr overthrew him. There was a few instances where those guys just weren't quite on the same page. And they, you know, we've seen that a lot this year where Carr and Ruggs haven't been on the same page. And I think today it was surprising a little bit to see that him and Agholor were just a little bit off target.
Yeah, it looked like Agholor was a little bit frustrated there, specifically on the 4th-and-3 that Carr threw a little bit short in the end zone, that where it looked like he could have caught it. But I bet Carr is probably telling him, hey, man, don't forget those touchdowns you've been dropping the last couple of weeks. So yeah, I guess they're kind of even now. But yeah, it's been something with Carr where, you know, certain times he throws it too short on a deep ball, and then other times he throws it too long. So he's having some issues with various receivers, not just, you know, Agholor and Ruggs, but even a couple to Waller. So, you know, we're pretty deep into the season now, so I don't know if it's a chemistry thing. I just think maybe he's not used to doing it. He hasn't been doing it as much the last few years, so maybe it's something that he's got to grow into moving forward.
I also think his confidence probably is slipped a little bit in terms of the offensive line. I think early on this year, I think he had more confidence, and they kind of struggled of late. I think you can see it in his eyes a little bit with the pressure. Today, the blitzes are coming from all different directions, so I think if and when Trent Brown's back next week, that'd be big. And I think also Rodney Hudson even had trouble today against Quinn and Williams. So I think overall their line wasn't very good today. I think he definitely suffers from that more than maybe most quarterbacks do.
Towards the end of the game, he was kind of throwing off his back foot when he didn't need to. So he was starting to feel a little phantom pressure there. Yeah, you can't do that too often. And I think he just did that a little too many times in the fourth quarter. But again, they got that redemptive play, and it all doesn't matter now.
That has been kind of weird to watch the last few weeks. Carr, you remember against Kansas City, the last play where he was intercepted, he did that too, where it was just like he gets the snap and he kind of is just like by default getting ready to throw off the back foot. He's been doing a lot of those in late game situations, just throwing off the back foot, just, I think, kind of prepare. I don't know if he's preparing himself for the pressure to be there and just kind of he's going to throw off the back foot regardless. But have you guys thought that was weird at all, the way he's kind of thrown a lot of those passes lately? I mean, it worked on the final play of the game. I think that one was kind of one of those back foot passes too.
I was gonna say, last week against the Falcons, when he threw his pick six, it was another one of those where the right side of the pocket was collapsing and then the pressure was about to get there, but he like did a weird jump pass kind of off his back foot and ended up throwing it behind Devontae Booker, and the Falcons picked it off and ran it back for a pick six. And so you know, obviously for the vast majority of the season, the offensive line has played well enough to where he hasn't really had to worry about it like that. But the last couple of weeks, they started to have some breakdowns, particularly on the right side. You know, Sam Young came back and started this game instead of Brandon Parker being at right tackle. So I'm not sure he trusts either one of those guys when it comes to protecting them when he's, you know, not looking at in that direction. So I guess we'll see with Brown, you know, if he's able to come back. Obviously, that would give them a huge boost if he's, you know, even if he's not fully healthy, I think he would be still be an upgrade over Young or Parker. So maybe once Brown gets back out there, he'll start settling down a little bit more.
He's gotten better at not throwing off his back foot as often as he did early in his career throughout the season. But I agree. I think he's starting to do that a little too much in the last few games. And this is getting to that part of the season where, you know, guys kind of regress in their fundamentals because you're not really working on fundamentals in practice too much now. You're just kind of going through your game plan. But after this week, when you see how it's hurting the offense, especially towards the end of the game, is something that, you know, he might want to work on a little more and put a bigger focus on it.
You know, Vic, you talked earlier about Cleveland Furl. You know, he had two big plays, two strip sacks, and doing it against a, you know, really good rookie left tackle in Mekhi Becton, a guy he's familiar with, from the same hometown. They played in the ACC together, Klee at Clemson, him at Louisville. And especially the first strip sack where he kind of showed a little speed rush to get around the edge of Becton. That was pretty impressive. That might be the best defensive play, best pass rush we've seen from him in his NFL career.
Yeah, after the game we talked to him, he mentioned how, like you said, he played against Becton a lot growing up and also in college. Becton was at Louisville, so he kind of had some secrets and some kind of things he knew how to work against him. So I think that was a good matchup for him. And definitely he had the two strip sacks. He almost got a third one. He came close later on in the game, so definitely was a factor more so than most other guys on defense. And again, for a guy who's been on COVID and kind of, he said he had some of his wind taken away from him and his conditioning wasn't quite where he wanted to be, definitely a nice comeback game for him.
That, to me, was definitely his best pass rush of his entire career. I mean, it was against a good left tackle that wasn't giving up much pressure at all this season. And it was a quick pressure where, you know, he just did a quick hand swipe and got in there right away. And the second sack, it was a stunt where he was supposed to set up the other guy to get inside, but he ended up just pushing Becton out the way and getting there for another strip sack. So maybe this was a kind of a turning point and he could apply a little more pressure because the Raiders definitely need it down the stretch.
Yeah, even though these were his first two sacks, though, he had been doing pretty well when it came to pressuring the quarterback this season. I think he was second on the team with pressure. So I guess it's not the hardest thing to do with how the pass rush has been. But he's pretty close to Crosby in terms of the total number of pressures. So he's like been getting really close, or he'll get there and you know, the guy will just get rid of the ball or somebody else gets the sack. But, you know, he's been better than the raw sack numbers make it appear, I think, this season when it comes to rushing the passer.
He's given himself a chance to get in, to get after that number that we set for him, 5.5 sacks on the season. Maybe if he has another couple of big games, he can get there and beat our number.
I also love his confidence. I think at one point today after the game, he said that all teams in the league fear the Raiders. And it's to say that after a narrow win over the Jets, that's a lot of confidence. That's definitely got some moxie. I can appreciate that.
Yeah, and I think he's talking about the Chiefs. I think he called them the so-called champs or something. So-called defending champs.
The so-called champs.
What do you mean?
Wow.
The big reason why he lost last 2 weeks because he didn't play. He was on a roll today. He was definitely feeling himself, which is good.
I mean, yeah, he did say that, too.
Yeah, I mean, he dominated the Chiefs the first time, so I guess he felt like, hey, if I was out there, we would have gave the boys the work.
You get two strip sacks, you could talk. You could talk. All right, so.
Though maybe when the Jets went for 206 yards, maybe you shouldn't talk that much, but it's all good. It's all good.
But he did criticize his run defense today. He's got to be better against the run. This would have been a really, really long flight home from New York for New Jersey if the Raiders had lost this game. I mean, it counts as a win on the standings, and I think by the time they watch film and put it away, they'll be able to look at it that way. It obviously wasn't pretty, wasn't perfect. This is a weird team. It's the team that's been able to go toe-to-toe, that has beaten the Chiefs and has gotten run out of town by the Falcons and nearly beat by the Jets. So we don't know what the hell to expect when the Colts come to town next week, but got to figure that the Raiders, if they can put together the kind of game that they played against the Chiefs the last time they were at home, they've got a chance to win one. Or if they play like they did the last 2 weeks, it could be a long one, but it'll be fun to see how this team responds the next four games.
Yeah, they're playing games that matter in December. That's a good step for them. So obviously they got to win this one coming up to have a chance at the playoffs, I think. But definitely, I think it's a, you know, it's a kind of a pick 'em. I'm sure this, the point spread probably be close to pick 'em probably. So I think it's anybody can win this game.
All right. Well, that'll wrap up this week's State of the Nation. We will be back in the middle of the week to get you set for the Raiders taking on Philip Rivers and the Indianapolis Colts.
Talk to you guys later.
Adios.